on 88.1. It's Maryland Morning. I'm Tom Hall. Coming up, Maryland Morning theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews the first of two plays in the Amy Herzog Festival at Baltimore's Center Stage. But first, it's time for this month's edition of Living Questions, our series in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. We're producing this series in partnership with the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies. And in a couple of weeks, we'll be partnering with ICJS at a public panel that takes up this important question: what role does the media play in shaping our perceptions of Islam, and how is it shaping religious discourse? My guests this morning are the two featured speakers on that panel, which will take place April 15th at the Park School. Rabia Chowdhury is an attorney and a National Security Fellow at the New America Foundation. Wajahat Ali is a playwright and the co-host and digital producer of Al Jazeera America's The Stream. On April 15th, along with the resident scholars at ICJS, they'll be discussing the topic, Being Muslim in America, Why Media Matters. This morning, Rabia Chowdhury joins me on the phone from her home in Baltimore, and Wajahat Ali joins us on the phone from Al Jazeera in Washington. Welcome to you both.
Thanks for having us.
So, Wajahat, you wrote a piece, a report with a few other people for the Center for American Progress called Fear Incorporated, The Roots of the Islamophobia Network in America. And you identified literally a handful of people who are dedicated, it appears, to spreading misinformation about Islam and Muslim Americans. Tell us what you found in your research.
Yes, it was a six-month investigation that I did for the Center for American Progress, and the report, like you mentioned, Fear Incorporated, was the first time that we really connected the money to the small, interconnected, incestuous group of players that have been responsible for promoting many of the anti-Muslim memes that first existed on the fringe, and especially after the 2010 Ground Zero Mosque controversy that was neither at Ground Zero nor a mosque, kind of catapulted it into the mainstream, if you will. And what we found out from a six-month investigation is essentially the Islamophobia Network, what we call it, is a tightly connected group of funders, the Nerve Center, who we call the Islamophobia Scholars and Think Tanks, most of them in D.C., who then create many of these memes and these documents that get spread vis-a-vis the third group, which is the grassroots networks like Act for America, which then gets amplified, which is in the fourth group, the mainstream media, and then finally ends up quite literally as talking points in the mouths of politicians, which is the fifth group. And I'll give you one quick example. The anti-Sharia legislation, American Law for American Courts, has entered 32 states in the past few years, passed in several. And if people are saying, well, where did this come from? Is this a groundswell of like millions of Americans who one day woke up and said, oh my God, Sharia is a threat to America? Nope. We traced it, and it was quite literally started from a think tank, Frank Gaffney's Center for Security Policy. His attorney, David Yerushalmi, then created the model draft of the anti-Sharia bill, quite literally hand-delivered to state senators and congressmen by Act for America, the grassroots groups. And then a lot of these individuals, you saw them on talk radio, you see them on Fox News, you see them on online media, trumping it up this fear that Sharia is apparently a threat to America. And it quite literally ended up in the mouths of nearly every single Tom Republican presidential candidate of 2012, except, of course, for Mitt Romney. We have to give him credit for not riding that fake boogeyman train. But it was quite literally in the mouths of Newt Gingrich, Herman Cain, Michelle Bachmann, Tim Pawlenty, and Rick Santorum. And it's still in the mouths of, very well-known popular Republican elected officials such as Bobby Jindal, governor of Louisiana, who just recently said there are apparently, quote-unquote, no-go zones in America. These, you know, Sharia-infested zones where Muslims have apparently taken over and replaced the McDonald's arches with minarets, and apparently the Statue of Liberty is wearing the burqa. I make joke of it, but essentially that's what we saw, is that these, you know, international memes, and it's, you know, the local becomes the national, becomes the international in this day and age of Twitter and social media. These memes were quite literally created, like you said, by a handful of people.
And Rabia Chowdhury, a lot of people know you from the podcast Serial, because you've taken up the cause of Adnan Syed. And between 1980 and 2005, 94% of terrorism in the United States was committed by non-Muslims. You have offered training to Muslims on how to address the fear, because along with the fact that a vast majority of the terrorists activity is committed by non-Muslims, two-thirds of the media coverage about Islam is negative. When you train Muslims to address this problem. What do you tell them?
Well, you know, I mean, part of the issue is, I mean, as Wajahat articulated really great, is, you know, this incredibly well-coordinated mechanism for propagating memes that, like, then stick, right? I mean, that's what a meme is, that sticks. And American Muslims, by and large, have really failed at producing counter memes or positive memes that then stick. You know, like, we've been saying the same, Islam is a religion of peace, for about 30 years, and it's not sticking and it's not working. And part of the problem is, while it's true that in terms of, like, terrorism statistics, I mean, when you look globally, I mean, according to Homeland Security officials, like 0.00125% of global Muslims are actual terrorists, or they're actually engaged in some kind of violent extremism. They're fighting in Syria, Iraq, what have you. It's a small number, but those folks also get a lot of power because they tend to echo the same kinds of narratives that folks in the Islamophobia Network do. And in the middle, all the you know, 99.999 go on, percent of Muslims, their narratives, their voices, their work, the ethos of their life, how they view their faith, all of that gets lost. We have tried really hard, especially since 9/11, to organize in a way that we are able to successfully create counter-narratives, and not just counter-narratives, but actually authentic narratives of what Muslims are about and what Islam is about, and haven't been very successful. A lot of that has been frustration with the media. You know, I mean, it's, you know, the conventional wisdom is if it bleeds, it leads. So nobody wants necessarily the positive stories. What's been fascinating for me through Serial is that, first of all, we have a story that, for the first time, it's a very, very well-known story of a young Muslim man that it's not connected to terrorism. So that's kind of a new framework for looking at a Muslim community or a young Muslim man. But also that, you know, we kind of bypassed mainstream media. I started blogging about it when the podcast launched. And the mainstream media came to us, and it became about the stories of people. And most people were completely unconcerned about his religion. In fact, they were very, very turned off by the fact that the state used the religion against him back in 1999. So some of the lessons, you know, I've learned is that, number one, Muslims have to be better at telling their stories as human beings and not necessarily putting religion first. That, you know, we tend to say, I'm a Muslim in X, I'm a Muslim in X. You kind of don't need to do that. You can just tell your story, and people may or may not know you're a Muslim, but, you know, that can be in the background. It doesn't have to be, you know, what you put forward first. The second is the power of social media and how we can actually bypass all of the mainstream media that has frustrated us for years because we can't get attention and tell our stories directly to the public. I don't know how successfully we can replicate that. You know, if you look at Serial as a model or the response to Serial, but I think it has to, at least we have to try it.
Rabia Chowdhury is an attorney and a national security fellow at the New America Foundation. She writes a blog called Split the Moon. Wajahat Ali is a playwright and the co-host and digital producer of Al Jazeera America's The Stream. You're listening to Living Questions, part of Maryland Morning here on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. So, Wajahat, rhetoric matters, obviously. The term radical Islam is thrown around quite frequently. You mentioned in the report that you wrote a few years ago that very few mention the term Christian terrorist, for example, when they were talking about Anders Breivik, the guy in Norway who murdered some, you know, more than 70 people. But you also point out that he cited as an influence many of these people that you've profiled in this report, part of this, what you refer to as the Islamophobia Network. When it comes to this rhetoric, what is the way to, and of course the White House convened this thing called the Countering Violent Extremism. The president has even taken some heat for not using the word, you know, Muslim extremists or Islamist extremists. What is the proper way we should frame what's going on with the people who are committing acts of terrorism in the name of Islam?
That's a very good question. I think what many minority communities, especially those who feel marginalized, especially in mainstream media, or those who don't have access to, say, power, such as Muslim Americans, what we want is we don't want a double standard. We want a uniform standard, right? So, for example, when a a violent act happens. The first prayer of any minority community is, please God, just let it be a white guy. Let it be a white guy. Let it be a white guy. Let it not be a Muslim, right? The reason being is we realize if it is a Muslim, the labeling happens, the knee-jerk scapegoating, the very inelegant lumping, if you will, and these questions of where is the quote-unquote moderate Muslim, right? Like we're unicorns. Like apparently we're like the Bigfoot. You can barely find us. And I think that's why even the framing of it shapes the discourse and shapes the understanding of the diversity of American Muslim experiences and also Islam. And that's why I think President Obama, I have to give him credit for being very elegant and I think consistent in his language, being very nuanced. And I think what he says, basically, and the CVE experts say, is if you look at the DNA of many of these individuals who are committing these acts, the DNA is shared across the line by others who commit violent extremism. So by essentially ceding ground to... if you basically call them Islamic terrorists and only Islamic terrorists, and you make this double standard, whereas for Anders Breivik, who quite literally committed acts of terrorism, you know, you could call him a lone wolf, right? But you don't call him a terrorist. Some people don't. Whenever there's a Muslim, there seems to be an automatic assumption, oh, has to be terrorist. And I think by calling it violent extremism, you take away the sensationalism, number one, you ground it in the reality of what it is. The DNA of violent extremism is essentially the same across the board. No one's denying that Muslims aren't doing this in the sense that these people aren't Muslim or say they're not Muslim. I don't think Robbie or myself have ever, you know, been propagandists or been apologists for this. But I think it is important to have the proper framing of it. And secondly, the reason why the framing is very important is the number one recruitment tool and propaganda tool of violent extremists like Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula or even ISIS, known as ISIL, is that the West is at war with Islam. That's their number one recruitment tool. That's the number one propaganda. So if you even give the framing as Muslim terrorist or Islamic terrorist, you kind of give them a legitimacy that they do not have within Islam or in the understanding of the overwhelming majority of Muslim communities worldwide. You want to defang that, and you want to essentially neuter that and strip them of that type of legitimacy that they seek to claim and rationalize by using and abusing religious language. I hope that makes sense.
It does. And Rabia Chaudhry, we're almost out of time, but just briefly, what do you think mainstream media can do better then, assuming that you know social media isn't going to be able to have quite yet the reach that mainstream media will have?
I think what mainstream media can do better definitely is to, for example, when you're talking about acts of violent extremism or terrorism, give fair coverage. If we know that the majority of perps in this country, at least, are not Muslim, where is the coverage on those cases? It is extremely skewed towards coverage of Muslim perps, and then on top of that, there's a quick leap to frame it as terrorism, even if later, for example, Major Nidal Hassan from, he was not even charged with terrorism, he was charged with workplace violence, but, you know, he became a terrorist, and this just reinforces the idea that this is like a pervasive, overwhelming issue in the Muslim community when it's really not. And it also puts Muslims in a very defensive stance where even something like this, you know, this White House initiative on CVE becomes extremely controversial in our communities because there are legitimate civil liberties concerns, and they just get exacerbated when people feel cornered. So if the mainstream media had coverage that was much more balanced on the kinds of things that happen, you know, you have right-wing extremists and these, you know, white militias that are really a much, much bigger threat to the country than Muslim terrorists. And they need to get the same kind of coverage, or greater coverage, if not the same.
Rabia Chaudhry is an attorney and national security fellow at the New America Foundation. Her blog is called Split the Moon. Wajahat Ali is a playwright and the co-host and digital producer of Al Jazeera America's The Stream. Thanks to you both, and we look forward to seeing you on the 15th.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having us.
And we will continue this conversation April 15th at 7 o'clock at the Wyman Arts Center on the campus of the Park School in North Baltimore. The panel will include Dr. Humaira Ziad, Dr. Benjamin Sachs, and Dr. Heather Miller Rubens, the resident scholars at the Institute for Christian and Jewish Studies. This event is free, and you are very welcome to join us. Come to our website, wypr.org/livingquestions, for a link to further details. On 88.1, it's Maryland Morning. You've been listening to the latest installment in our series, Living Questions, produced by WYPR in partnership with the ICJS, in which we examine the role of religion in the public sphere. You can hear the other conversations in our Living Questions series when you visit our website. Again, the address is wipr.org/livingquestions. I'm Tom Hall. Lots more ahead on Maryland Morning. Thanks to everybody who has made a pledge in our spring membership campaign. If you've not yet made it to the phone or to the website to pledge your support, now is the perfect time to do just that. Call us at 410-235-1395, and here's Nathan Sterner to tell you why your support is so very important.